Early on the morning of November 8, 1922, the Republicans made their most determined attack on Wellington Barracks during the Civil War. Maybe it was a deliberate reprisal for the mistreatment of prisoners. Or maybe not. The other military barracks around the city were also attacked in the same week. Either way, the day provided a microcosm of the various elements that made up Ireland's Civil War. A surprise attack, a reprisal, a roundup of prisoners, and a bitter experience that marked some of the participants for life.
In most military barracks, there's a very established routine. I mean, especially if there's training going on, and you know, there would be a reveille parade between the hours of 6 a.m., 8 a.m., the normal morning routine would start. And usually, probably about 8 a.m., there would be a morning check parade of all the troops, and they would be mustered on the square by their non-commissioned officers, corporals and sergeants. A senior NCO would initially check off the parade and have them ready for inspection by the garrison commander.
A good target?
You know, like shooting fish in a barrel. And the thing is, in a wartime situation, you wouldn't normally, nowadays, you wouldn't have such a thing. But here, what you had was a curious thing. You had an army trying to establish itself as a form of force that was also doing this in the maelstrom of what was developing into a civil war. So for the opportunist irregular commanders in the area, they realised that if they were going to be provided with the very easy targets, because these were new soldiers, very young men for the most part, who hadn't fought in the War of Independence, who were being knocked into shape as soldiers. Now, you can imagine, it would be a little bit like the Viet Cong having, back in the days of the Vietnam War, not being able to attack American troops in their bases in Vietnam, but being able to attack them in their training depots back in the likes of Parris Island and Fort Benning in Georgia, where they would be least expecting an attack. And that's exactly what happened with regard to the Republican forces' attack on Griffith Barracks.
The barracks orderly clerk was attending the morning parade, while the soldiers were listening to the orders of the day read by the regimental sergeant major. Suddenly, he heard machine gun fire. At first, the clerk thought it was practice fire. Then he saw spurts of dust springing up from the ground as the bullets landed around him. He flung himself to the ground. The Republicans had occupied the upper stories and roofs of the houses across the canal at the back of the barracks. From there, they raked the parade square with rifle and machine gun fire. A total of 18 soldiers were hit. One was killed instantly and 17 badly injured.
I will not forget this morning for some time to come. It was a pretty tight corner to be in. The first outburst crashed in on us just like a flash of lightning and did most of the damage. All of us that could crawled around for cover. It was simply death to walk in the square at that time. It seemed as if marbles were being rained down from an immense height. The whole thing lasted about 15 minutes. The rest of the soldiers came out then and started some Lewis guns going.
100 soldiers had been lined up on the square shoulder to shoulder. The only surprise is that more of them were not killed.
The thing that probably saved more men's lives on both sides in the Irish Civil War was the fact that so many of the rank and file on both sides were very badly trained and had very little experience. And so people maybe are blasting away, but they're not blasting at anything in particular. I would say you had, certainly having Lee Enfields and Lewis guns, they should have been able to do much more damage. There should have been, your figure was that I think there was only one actual fatality, mm-hmm. and then others that died from their wounds.
Yeah. Out of 100.
Out of 100.
Square.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they got to set themselves up, they were using weapons that would have had that would have been ideal for a little bit of distance, and they would have time to zero in on their targets, there should have been at least 10 killed. Again, lack of marksmanship, lack of training, and maybe lack of will to actually want to kill one another by the new young soldiers on either side.
At the same time, a butcher's van owned by one Orr McGurk of Harold's Cross was making a delivery to the barracks. A storm of bullets peppered the unfortunate delivery men, killing their horse and wounding the driver. The Republicans made their escape across country through the villages of Kimmage and Crumlin, pursued by Free State troops. They were seen carrying two badly wounded men of their own. The army later claimed the two were killed in a firefight.
Relatives of the soldiers surrounded the barracks, looking for news of their loved ones.
Free State troops flooded the area after the attack, and ambulances dashed to and from the hospital with the casualties. Most of the attackers had got away, but in the aftermath of the attack, the Free State soldiers managed to exact at least some revenge for the attack. James Spain was a local Republican.
Micheál McDonagh is a Sinn Féin press officer.
I think he had been a volunteer in Dublin during the town war. He was involved in the action, the attack on the barracks, and what seems to have happened, he was pursued, and then when he was captured, he was shot and killed.
An hour after the attack on the barracks, he was spotted in neighbouring streets, wounded in the leg, trying to find a friendly house. Mrs. Dolman of 22 Denore Road was feeding her chickens when a panic-stricken young man approached her, wounded in the leg.
God's sake, let me in! Jesus, Mary and Joseph, help me! If they get me, they'll shoot me!
She let him in, but hot on his heels was a Lancia armoured car with five soldiers in it. They pulled him out of the house. The last Mrs. Dolan saw of him, he was pleading,
"Don't shoot me!"
His body was dumped in nearby Susan Street, shot five times in the chest and head.
Yeah, in all these situations, state forces have the upper hand, as they did in the Civil War, particularly in Dublin. They were very much in the, you know, in the ascendancy here, so it was a case of really stamping out whatever remnants of IRA activity were in the city. So they were quite ruthless. And yes, I mean, you would describe them as war crimes.
This guy Spain, who was hunted down, you pictured the situation. You have a number of terrorized young Free State soldiers who were on the receiving end of a lot of hot lead, and suddenly their officers and NCOs managed to gather them together into a cohesive force. They respond, they retaliate, and they managed to capture somebody, because heretofore they were shooting into the thin air. They wouldn't, and all of these young Free State soldiers would have been juiced up in adrenaline. Their NCOs and officers would have been juiced up on a sense of revenge, and they managed to actually catch something. They have a tangible target now. And so it's not unusual then that, I mean, it's the officers should have shown restraint there and behaved in a professional manner. But sadly, too many of the officers, efficient as they were maybe in leadership and conducting the war, were too emotionally connected. And they would have seen this as an unwarranted attack on their men, when most of them wouldn't have even been armed. So they wouldn't have cared too much about the unfortunate Mr. Spain.
In sweeps of the immediate area, Free State troops picked up another 20 or so Republican suspects. Among them was Frank Sherwin, aged 17. He was not a member of the IRA proper, but of the FINA, the IRA's youth wing. He and five other young guerrillas had been carrying out attacks in Dublin, but not, according to him, the attack on Wellington Barracks. When the soldiers burst into their safe house, they found five revolvers and six grenades. Sherwin recalled, "We were marched to Wellington Barracks about a mile away. Some of the people on the streets shouted and jeered at us. Perhaps they knew some of the soldiers who had been shot that morning, but anyhow, most of the people were against us in the Civil War." He was brought in at the gate of the barracks, past the carcass of the butcher's horse killed in the attack, and into the office of Charlie Dalton's intelligence department. There, the officers punched and kicked him, trying to get the name of his commanding officer. He refused to give it. "My clothes were dragged off me until I was naked. I was lashed for about 20 minutes. The following day, they tried again. Joe Dolan, an intelligence officer, told him, "You won't get out alive unless you talk." They hit him in the head with a revolver and poked him with wire. Dolan jabbed him with a bayonet and stuck a rifle in his mouth. He even produced a razor and threatened to cut the prisoner's throat. In the end, they decided he wouldn't talk and threw him back in with the other prisoners. Sherwin recalled, "My face was swollen, my nose was broken, several teeth were missing, and I had cuts and lumps on my head, with bruises all over my body. I could not stand or move for 9 days. He was never fully to recover the use of his right arm. We know of Frank Sherwin's experiences only because he later wrote a memoir. No doubt he was not the only prisoner to receive such treatment in revenge for the attack on Wellington Barracks. The Civil War came to an end several months later, in April 1923. By then, almost 80 prisoners had been officially executed by the Free State, 150 more killed, like James Spain, in on-the-spot reprisals. The total number of dead and wounded has never been counted, but we know that around 800 Irish soldiers were killed, and over 12,000 Republicans were imprisoned by the war's end. The war remained a painful memory for many years. Griffith Barracks got its name shortly after the events of November 1922. It remained an army barracks until the early 1990s. Today, there is little to remind us that it once was at the centre of a bitter little corner of Ireland's Civil War. Looking out over today's peaceful campus, it is hard to imagine that such ghastly events could have happened here. We can see the square where the soldiers on parade were mown down by machine gun fire. In one of the classrooms, Dolan and Dalton beat prisoners with rifles and bayonets. Where now there is a national school, once there was a barbed wire cage which held the anti-treaty internees. Does anyone remember these horrors today? Should we remember? Or should we let them drift into the past, unknown and unremembered?
So the actual Irish army came of age during the Civil War. That was its early defining point at that time. You could look at the Irish Army's history and pick out a few defining points. The Civil War was one of them. The Second World War, its role during the emergency, was another. And our entree into UN operations in the Congo was another. And it's the Civil War is the one that's downplayed the most. I mean, there were all kinds of various engagements around the country where the Free State Army performed very well and blooded itself and cut its teeth as a professional army. But they were never commemorated within the army because the Civil War was too emotive.
I think people should remember and analyse and try to learn the lessons from it. I don't think we should remember in a kind of vengeful way or a way to fuel conflict, but I think it's important to understand people's motivation. And the study of history is important for our overall understanding, not just purely historical events.
Me father was a stater, and me mother loved a tan. She loved her ham and her sausages, and her soldier fancy man. Nora's up in Jacobs, and Mary's on the town. And I joined the transport union when they sent me nose was brown.